Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome into 20th and Blake here on the Mile High Sports Podcast Network. I am your host, Drew Kreisman, and as always, I'm excited to be talking Colorado Rockies baseball with you here on the show. And it's been an interesting homestand so far, hasn't it? Since last we spoke, the Rockies dropped a couple of very winnable tough ball games against the Tampa Bay Rays, and then won a tough ball game against the Arizona Diamondbacks that they very easily could have lost, especially right there at the end. Got a couple of big takeaways for you on how the team is performing in general, then a few more specific observations as we'll dive into some questions that y'all asked out there on the Twitter sphere. So let me begin by saying, I think the big thing that's the most obvious, right, which is that the team looks like a completely different ball club at home. Yes, they're still mostly losing games so far, though I guess they're 2-2 at home so far. But just that every game has been close, every game has been winnable, which also means that every game has been losable there. Obviously, getting the walk-off grand slam is not something that you can count on a ton. But the fact remains that they've been in all of these games, just if you're watching inning to inning, almost across the board, in every element, the starting pitching, which is one of the things that's the funniest, right? Because we tend to think that starting pitching is going to really, really struggle at Coors Field. It should be easier out on the road. If you've listened to me for a long time, you probably know that it's not nearly as simple as that. And oddly enough, there are several Rockies pitchers who tend to be better at home. And one of them has always been Kyle Freeland. And so, you know, seeing him, I feel like in many ways, his first two starts and then his third start are a microcosm of how this season has felt, right? The first two were just about as bad as they could be. That starting road trip was just about as bad as it could be. And then he came home, and while he wasn't dominant, like he didn't go 9 innings and 3 hits and 0 runs or anything like that, right? He just came out, put up a 5-inning, almost got the quality start. That error there was pretty rough. McMahon, I'll talk about this in a minute with the defense and stuff, but 5 innings, 2 earned runs, and was able to work through some frustration. Had a couple of at-bats there in the 4th and 5th innings where guys were fouling off a ton of pitches, got into double digits with a guy, but was able to get him with the strikeout. And then was able to finish off his evening on one of those as well, getting a guy on the 10th pitch of the at-bat. And so, for me, that's a big step in the right direction, obviously, for Kyle, but I think it just shows you that, yes, you know, one of the things that tends to happen with Colorado Rockies teams when they're inexperienced, when they're younger, when they're rebuilding, whatever, is that that difference, which is always there, they're always a much better home team than a road team, but it just gets much more extreme, right? And I think if you've been watching closely, it almost feels like you're watching two different ball clubs. That road trip, it just felt like, did they forget how to play baseball at times, right? And then here at home, you're going, man, they were one key base hit in game 3, right there, 8th inning, they're down 2, bases loaded, nobody out. One key hit, you win that ball game. And then in game 2, they had the lead and 2 outs, 2 strikes on several guys, but they give up the 5-run rally, right? And ultimately, the game-winning hit in that one was on a ball that hit the lip of the grass and hopped over the head of Michael Tolia, who's like 6'5 and a remarkable defender at first, right? So that was just a little bit of bad luck, a little bit of bad execution, but far, far different from how they looked on the road. And I think that that's something that we're probably just going to see throughout the season, right? Is a much different ball club when they're at home. Let's get into some of these questions because they'll allow us to dart around and talk about several different topics. I want to begin with this question about Chris Bryant, because I do think it's on everybody's mind still. And essentially, the Rock Pals podcast, check them out, says, when should we really start to worry about Chris Bryant if he continues with this offensive production, or more accurately, lack thereof? Now, obviously, a lot of people are well past this point. They've been concerned about Chris Bryant for a while, right? But to take the question in earnest, and this isn't an answer that a lot of people are going to love, but I do think you've got to give it quite a bit more time, quite frankly, at least half of a season. And I know people don't like hearing that. Now, you don't have to keep batting him cleanup and all that, right? Like, here in the early going, when you still not, and again, I am of the belief that you commit to the rebuild, but I'm also of the belief that you don't punt on entire seasons at the beginning just because. You don't come out trying to lose. That's not a good way to approach any professional sport. And so, yeah, if he continues to struggle, you move him down in the lineup, you do certain things there. But I do think, and we're going to talk about a couple of these guys here in a minute. I'm going to extend this conversation next to Nolan Jones and Alaurice Montero. But we are still in small sample size territory. That said, the process is not good for Chris Bryant right now. In fact, let me do this specifically, and I'm going to talk about these two guys. Montero, who this is part of an answer to the next question, so just be ready for that, because somebody else asked about whether or not Montero might get DFA'd. Because right now, if you look at his numbers, Alaurice Montero has some of the worst raw numbers in baseball and on the team. He's got a WRC plus of like 9. What is his OPS plus is 13. He's hitting 160. He's on basing 241. He's slugging 160. That is awful. Those are the worst numbers of the top 10 hitters here that I've got listed for the Colorado Rockies, right? Meanwhile, Chris Bryant does have some hits. Now, he's only batting 125, so he's actually got a worse batting average. The 263 on base, 219 slugging. He does have a home run. He's knocked in 4 runs, where Montero only has the 1 ribby on the season, right? And so you might be thinking to yourself, okay, those guys are struggling an equal amount. However, this is where, especially in a small sample size territory, it really helps to dive into some of these extra fancy numbers. And I'm not going to get too weird with it. Don't run away if this isn't necessarily your thing. But when we look at the process, sometimes, you know, it can feel a little bit ambiguous when I say, well, he's swinging at strikes and not at balls, or the at-bat looked good, this, that, or the other. Some numbers that we have, if you go to Baseball Savant, this is a good time of year especially, and if you've never used it before, to get yourself a little bit familiar with baseballsavant.com, a lot of great information there. And when you go to Alaurice Montero's page, you'll see that while a lot of his numbers are incredibly low, one thing he's doing well is hard hit percentage. But what we want to look at right now are expected numbers, because based on exit velocities, strikeouts, and launch angles, you can expect a certain amount of production given enough at-bats. The problem is he just hasn't gotten enough at-bats. So with Alaurice Montero, the reason why I know his process has been good through watching him, he's only striking out 13.8% of the time. That's a remarkable improvement from, that's just a phenomenal number. Now, we can't expect that to continue, but when a guy is putting the ball in play that often, striking out that infrequently, you expect there to be some hits in there. He's also walking 10% of the time, which is a very, very good number. Those two things in and of themselves bode incredibly well for Montero. That shows you the quality of the at-bats that he's having. He is not, and I'll go back to Chris Bryant here in a moment, striking out on 3 pitches very often, which is something we're seeing a lot out of Bryant. Where you can really see the difference, though, is in the expected batting average for Montero. While he's hitting .190, his expected batting average is .269. His expected slugging is .462. So while his weighted on base above the average right now is about as low as it can get at .198, it's expected to be .342. In other words, that was a very long-winded way of saying Alaurice Montero has been incredibly unlucky. He's hitting what the ball players call atom balls. Everything he hits is right at a defender, and that's just pure dumb bad luck. right? And so you've got to be more patient with a 25-year-old. Remember, Nolan Jones was 25 last year, right? Montero is still, I know it feels like he's been around a while, but he's still very young. And this is still very much supposed to be his kind of first real full big season of getting everyday at-bats out of the gate and them kind of committing to it. So I wouldn't be too concerned about that yet. So why does your eye test tell you? If you've been watching closely, you see these two guys with terrible numbers, and your eye test has probably told you that Montero hasn't been having those awful, awful at-bats. And you're right, through the numbers we just ran through. So let's look at those numbers for Chris Bryant. We talked about him batting 175, but his expected batting average is actually lower at 167. His expected slugging, 290. So while his actual weighted on base is 240, so he's been better than Montero a little bit, his expected weighted on base is 279. Remember, Montero's was 342. And that, for me, 100% encapsulates the two different places those guys are in right now. Montero is getting bad results despite a good process. Chris Bryant is getting bad results because of a bad process. He's striking out 36% of the time versus Montero's 13, right? Now, he is walking a little bit. Like, the walks are okay. He's at 7.9%, 8%. That's fine. Right. But yeah, so we need to see a better process out of Bryant. Now, it has been interesting. He did hit that big home run that helped the Rockies win a game. He got an RBI hit in yesterday's ball game that helped the Rockies win that one. And so he does have a couple of good key hits that helped them get to two of their four wins. Right. But obviously, when you're paying a guy $27 million, that's the other big difference, I guess, between Chris Bryant and Laurys Montero, right? One is 32, getting paid $27 million a year, and expected to be the core part of your team for years to come, where Montero is a guy who, if the results never do follow, could be traded or DFA'd. And while it would be frustrating and ultimately end up, you know, having a lot of people come back again once more to dunk on the Nolan Arenado trade, and to a fair extent at that point, you know, it wouldn't be as much of an anchor around the future of the team as Chris Bryant continuing to be this bad. But back to the very first thing I said, do I think he's going to continue to be this bad? I don't. You never know. You never know. If he keeps striking out this much, the numbers aren't going to turn around. It really doesn't look like he is seeing breaking stuff at all. He took a ton of ugly swings on breaking balls against Zach Gallen. That said, a lot of people do. Also, that said, his base hit was on a knuckle curveball. His RBI hit, it hung up a little bit. It wasn't the best one Gallen threw in the game, but it was inside. It wasn't an easy one either. It was a good swing. And so, I don't know. I'm perplexed by the terribleness of it so far, but I don't think it will continue. And you do have to give a guy quite a bit more time, in my opinion, before you go into full panic mode. I know it's ugly to watch, especially when he's right there in the middle of the order. It feels like every time Chris Bryant comes up, the bases are loaded and there's one out and the team is down by two, and then he strikes out on three pitches. But we do need to give this a little bit longer to know whether or not this is just a bit of a cold stretch and a slump at the beginning of a season, which can happen to anybody. By the way, not to belabor this point, but go and look at Nolan Arenado's numbers right now. They're not much better than either of these guys, right? So, like, these slumps happen. And when they happen at the beginning of the season, it feels even worse because you don't have anything else to go on. But we got to have a little bit, or at least I will have a bit of a longer leash.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
That. But like I said, you might have to, especially if other guys are hitting, to start moving them down in the lineup. And we've seen them do that a little bit, but it'll be interesting to see how they handle that part of it, right? I mentioned a moment ago that we had a question that included a conversation about Alaurice Montero. So I'll get to Colby's question, which says, if Jordan Beck, this is going to be a fun conversation, continues to hit well at AAA, what direction do you think the Rockies take? He says Montero seems like an easy DFA choice. I think I just argued against why I don't think he is, but I understand why you would think so. But does Chuck become an everyday DH with Beck in right field? If called up, he needs to play, but who sits? So I was just talking about not getting too far ahead of ourselves in the negative analysis of Chris Bryant. This is one of those places where you don't want to get too far ahead of yourself in the positive analysis of Jordan Beck. That said, can I give you some numbers? He's played 8 games, and so, yes, small sample size territory. 8 games, he's hit 3 home runs, he's driven in 9, he's scored 7 times. He's walking 19.4% of the time, but he's also striking out 30% of the time. That's a WRC plus of 191, meaning that his bat has been about 91% better than league average in AAA right now. He's hitting .321, on basing .444, and slugging 786. So yeah, he's putting up numbers like what we saw Nolan Jones doing out of the gate at AAA last year. Now, like with Nolan Jones, a week is great, but a month of that will get you called up, right? So we do still have probably at the fastest another 3 weeks before this becomes a very real, like Jordan Beck is knocking on the doors. That said, he had a phenomenal spring. There was chatter that he might make the club out of spring, which would have been one of the most aggressive and surprising things the Rockies have done with a prospect in a while. But quite frankly, he's taking the prospect world by storm. He's been a lot better than a lot of people, I think, expected, especially in basically every element of the game. He's faster than a lot of people realized. He's a better defender. Across that, he can play in center. One of the things that when he was drafted, he was kind of thought of as a guy with really good hit tools, really good raw power, is going to have to play in the corner outfields, but probably be a plus defender in the corner outfield. And as he's played in the minors, it's just become clear he's a really great all-around athlete that you can put everywhere. Really clean swing. There's a lot to like about Jordan Beck. And yeah, he very easily could be. In fact, I think of all the Rockies prospects in the system right now, with Veen coming off the injury, with Drew Romo playing catcher, which is just the toughest position in the game, and there's so many other things he's got to do well. Amador being a bit younger, and Yankiel Fernandez having a few more holes in his swing, I think Jordan Beck is the guy most likely to emerge as, okay, the Rockies may have another star on their hands as soon as the second half of this year, or certainly coming out of the gate in 2025. Back to Colby's question, though, about where do you fit him in? I do think, a bit like with Nolan Jones, some of that's going to be determined by whether or not the Rockies experience any injuries early on, right? If anyone gets hurt, then that's an opportunity to bring a guy up. I agree with your assessment that you don't want to sit him on the bench. That's part of why, you remember last year when Nolan Jones got called up for like a weekend because somebody got hurt, but then they sent him back down very quickly. A lot of people didn't like or understand that, but I could see something very similar happening with Jordan Beck, where maybe you give him a weekend of big league experience at some point. If someone's just got a small injury, one of your outfielders, maybe he gets in the games, maybe he doesn't, gets a little bit of that experience, but then goes back down, keeps doing what he's doing, and then when a slightly more, maybe not permanent, but long-term spot opens up, then you can start, you know, making those decisions about where to go. For now, I really wouldn't be in the business of DFAing anybody at 25 years or younger, right? There are other things that you can certainly do to make space for him. But I think at this point right now, I mean, he would really need to be tearing the cover off the ball for a month plus for you to start considering getting anybody off of the roster for him, whether that's trading someone. And let's get into this conversation a little bit too, because Will asked about if the Rockies, he says the Rockies should be obvious sellers again at the trade deadline, who could be a couple of guys that could or should be moved. This is one of those things where you're again looking at veterans. Jake Cave has been, I think, a lot better than people expected out of the gate and could be this year's version of Mike Moustakas, a veteran that came in and nobody seemed happy about it on Twitter or in Rockies media or Rockies fandom anywhere. But then he came out, performed pretty well, had a good first half of the season, made himself attractive to a team out there that's trying to go for it. And they throw the Rockies an interesting pitching prospect for him. That's a guy, I've loved what I've seen out of Jake Cave so far. He's been incredibly entertaining. He's been fantastic off of the bench. His bat at bats look great. He looks good in the field. He looks good on the bases. So that's the kind of guy, though, as you're fourth or maybe even sometimes fifth outfielder, depending on how you feel about Michael Tolia, who's still providing production, but is not a guy you've got signed long-term to going to do anything. That's definitely a potential trade candidate, right? But I don't think that to answer these two questions at the same time, really does open it up for Jordan Beck. I do think that, you know, it's going to have to be a bit of, you know, Michael Tolia's in that spot right now. And while his numbers aren't fantastic, I think he's looked really, really good at the plate as well. Back to that process thing. Two homers on the year from either side of the plate, which is great to see out of a switch hitter. So you can afford to be patient with Jordan Beck a little bit, but there does come a time where you got to look at it. And this could be one of those things where if Bryant continues to struggle as bad as he has, he goes on the IL. I know he's had a little bit of a back thing already. They've talked about this a little bit. You can, you know, what I'm not suggesting anything. I would never suggest things. That is not my job, right? We all understand what I'm saying. But if Chris Bryant hits the IL, you know, and needs some time to get himself right, that opens up a spot at first where you can move, you know, Tolia in there, or you can have Charlie go to DH at times. You can move Montero around and you can start creating space in right field for a guy like Jordan Beck. And so that's, I think, you know, probably the most likely scenario. But hey, if he keeps tearing the cover off the baseball, we'll return to that conversation. To get to the rest of Will's question about some other guys that could be traded, two players who I think have looked pretty darn good quietly here in the early going for the Rockies, and I would rarely suggest that they trade quality pitching off of the team, especially from the starting rotation. But we've got to keep a close eye throughout the year on Cal Quantrill and Dakota Hudson. Both veteran pitchers with success elsewhere, who they don't have signed long-term, who may not be interested in hanging around long-term. And then we also know that the longer you pitch at Coors Field, the longer it has an opportunity of exposing your weaknesses, right? So let's say Dakota Hudson he's looked great. His first two starts have been very encouraging. Let's say he continues to have a really good first half. Absolutely, a team would be interested in picking him up. The Rockies don't have him long-term. There would be some concern that his career walk numbers may eventually rear their ugly head, trade it while the commodity is hot. And that would be one of those. And it's a similar thing with Quantrill. With Quantrill, I'm more interested in, again, if I was running the team, and there are a lot of reasons why I'm not, potentially re-signing that guy. If he can find success here, I think Quantrill's the kind of guy you actually can sort of lock in as your number three for the next couple of years. And feel like, you know, if it's going to be Chase Dolander, I think it's pronounced Dolander. I've been calling him Dolander, whatever. If he's going to be the guy, you've got a few other guys. If Gabriel Hughes or Jordy Vargas come back strong, Sean Sullivan struck out 13 guys the other day in the minors. The Rockies have some young pitchers suddenly doing some pretty interesting and exciting things. So if that, you know, happens, you really can afford to move these veteran contact first, but weak contact pitchers like Quantrill and Hudson for younger pitchers or certain things like that. But you should look into maybe re-signing one of those guys, but they may not be interested either. So if that's the case, I think that's one of the rare, I've always thought, I'm going to do a side rant here, that it would be an interesting strategy for the Rockies to try to bring in pitchers on one-year deals, have them have good first halves, and use the argument of if they can be successful here, they can be successful anywhere, right? And that's obviously never really been a regular thing, partially because guys don't want to sign here in the first place. And of course, the other part of that is you have to have a good first half. You have to have a first half that's good enough that another team is going to come out and trade you. One terrible start at Coors Field and your ERA is 27 or what, you know, Kyle did that on the road, but you know what I mean. And so, you know, it just hasn't, even if that was ever intended to be a strategy, it certainly never panned out. But I would be very curious to see if either of those guys could be swung at the deadline this year. And then, yeah, you know, they're not going to trade Charlie Blackmon. On any other team, that would be potential. He's having a great first half. He's a veteran. You're probably not going to have him around that much longer. Would he like to join a winning team and go and play in the postseason for his last hurrah? Maybe, probably, but also Charlie Blackmon has always been very clear about wanting to be a Colorado Rocky kind of for life. So I don't know. I just think that there's a 3% chance or lower that something like that happens. So, yeah. So I had another couple of questions, but I'm going to have to get to them on a part two because I've been talking for a little while. And I would like to end this with the biggest silver linings on the team right now. I'm going to try to do this semi-regularly on the podcast and with one pitcher and one position player to highlight that are doing particularly well at any given moment. And today's pitcher, with apologies to Ryan Feltner, who was absolutely fantastic in his outing, striking out 10 guys over six innings and becoming the first pitcher, a Rockies pitcher, to get double-digit strikeouts since 2021. So it was a great, great outing, but I have got to highlight once again Victor Vodnik. And for the reason, because this podcast has been largely about process, that this guy is starting to put up eye-opening numbers. Let's go back to some basic numbers, and then I'm going to send us back over to Baseball Savant. Let's go on a little trip around Victor Vodnik's numbers. His ERA after 7.2 innings pitched is 0. Doesn't get any better than that. Struck out 7. He's walked 4. There's your one major concern, right? Giving up 3 hits. Actually, I've got one other concern as we get into the process. He is, when he's giving up contact, getting hit kind of hard. 57.9% of the contact he's giving up is hard hit, according to Baseball Savant. And so that could mean that in the future, some of those will start to drop for more hits, more runs, and that's going to hurt him. But why has he managed to keep it clean so far? Well, his fastball velocity is rated in the 92nd percentile, meaning only 8% of major league pitchers are throwing the ball harder than Victor Vodnik right now, who's averaging 97 on the fastball. He's also, and we'll talk about extension in the future. Extension refers to how far the pitcher is extending his throwing arm toward the plate. In other words, how close is his release point when he lets go of the ball to home plate? And we tend to think of bigger, taller guys as having great extension. And they say that, you know, that can make a 93-mile-an-hour fastball feel like a 96-mile-an-hour fastball. Victor Vodnik's not a big guy, but he does have a big wingspan and a kind of a funky, interesting delivery that allows him to get extension, according to Baseball Savant, in the 91st percentile. So, in other words, right now, Victor Vodnik's fastball is sitting at 97. It feels like it's coming in at about 100 miles an hour, and guys are not lining it up against him at all, right? The other factor has been his great slider. His slider movement, on average, is, again, in the elite, in the top percentile here. He's in the top 5% of the league. So when you've got a fastball that's playing at elite velocity and a slider that's playing at elite movement, his pitch qualities have just been absolutely fantastic. He's had a few of these at-bats where he loses the handle a little bit, and as the numbers show, he's tending to miss out of the zone when he misses, and so he's walking guys, as opposed to if you miss right down the middle and you tend to give up the home run and things like that there. But yeah, right now, Vodnik has been one of the more unhittable guys in baseball. Basically, he's in the top 9% of these are really fancy, funky statistics, and I don't want to start quoting weird ones at you, but base outs saved above the average, stuff like that. Those are the kinds of things that you look at when you've got small sample sizes, because an ERA of zero after 7.2 innings, as nice as that is, he's not going to have a zero ERA this season. He's going to go through his struggles, but when you look at the quality of pitches that he's throwing right now, they're very, very difficult to hit. That's exactly the kind of thing you want to be doing. And the reason I'm highlighting him, say, as opposed to particularly Ryan Feltner, and I've mentioned this before about Vodnik, is remember that he's a big part of this rebuild. He's really the first guy from Bill Schmidt's admission that the team needed to rebuild, and they traded all those veterans last year, and they brought in younger pitchers, and this was one of them. And he's the first guy who's really making his way in the big leagues of that group. We saw a little bit of Justin Brule, but that wasn't really a part of this. Victor Vodnik came in from Atlanta for Pierce Johnson. The Rockies also got Tanner Gordon in that trade. Tanner Gordon had a very good spring training, has yet to pitch in the minors in 2024. But Vodnik out of the gate has been fantastic. And these are the kinds of players that they need to hit. The guys they have targeted in those types of trades where when it happened, you weren't going, okay, well, Pierce Johnson, you know, he came in, he was the closer for a while, he pitched well, and then he was really not pitching well, and they traded him for a couple of guys. And you go, all right, well, let's see what these guys do, right? And so far, it's looking really great for Victor Vodnik in 2024. But not quite as great as it's looking for our position player. Again, I've got to give apologies to Ryan McMahon, who really has been their best position player, despite his odd struggles defensively. He seems to almost always get out to a little bit of a defensive slump and then lock it in. I don't know what that is, but it's happened the last several years, so I'm not concerned about it. Ezekiel Tovar has also been really, really good at the plate and much better at shortstop since the road trip where he actually, oddly enough, struggled a little bit. But Brenton Doyle has been the most exciting player to watch on the Colorado Rockies in 2024. And that will continue to be the case if he hits. In fact, if Brenton Doyle hits, he's one of the most exciting players in all of Major League Baseball to watch. And right now, he's hitting. He's hitting .275. He's on basing .310. He's slugging .525. He's got two homers, four doubles. He's driven in five. Walked a couple of times. So the OPS plus at 125. Now remember, this was a guy who we were talking about. If he could bring his OPS plus up to 80 or 90, he would be one of those three plus win players. He would be, I've often compared him to DJ LeMahieu, a guy who doesn't drive your offense, but helps you here and there, and is a massive help everywhere else on the field. Now, we are, of course, I will say again on this show, in small sample size territory with Brenton Doyle. But this is much, much better than we saw, especially for the first couple of months last year. I did feel like in August and September, he was making much better contact and, like I was talking about with Montero earlier, hitting atom balls. Bad luck. But he started to come around in September, and he actually hit over .270 for the month of September last year. He hit well throughout spring training, and he's hitting well to start the year. So there are plenty of signs that Doyle might be moving in not just a positive. Again, I think a lot of us should be prepared for these numbers to come down. But if you want to live in a happy fantasy world for just a minute, I'm trying to give you, if there's a thing, you've listened to this much Rockies talk, is there anything through this pretty rough start to actually be over the moon excited about? If it can continue, it's this. Because if Doyle can be an above average offensive player, if Doyle can be a just below average offensive player, he could be an all-star. If he can be an above average offensive player, boy, oh boy, oh boy. Do the Rockies have themselves something here with this young man? He's 26. That's young, but it's not, you know, he's not the 23, the 22 that Tovar is. But, you know, for a guy who was never a top prospect, for a guy who came in and really did struggle at the plate for those first several months and for the totality of last year was one of the worst hitters in baseball. For him to be off to this good of a start, the defense and speed and all that stuff is still there. He's still tremendous out there, of course. This is pretty exciting. So if he can keep it going, even if there are the inevitable setbacks, and he settles into being a guy who hits 250 for the year, that would be remarkable. That would be really incredible for Brenton Doyle and even more strengthen that part of the core that the Rockies are building around with Doyle, Jones, Tovar, and maybe soon to be Jordan Beck and some of these other guys. But it has just been remarkable to see him make this kind of consistent contact, make himself an offensive threat in these games. He's hitting the ball hard. He's hitting it the other way. He's getting his extra base hits. He's been a much better hitter at the plate than most Rockies hitters this far in the season. And that's not something I think that many of us expected. So there, to me, is your biggest silver lining so far. I've got a few more questions to get to, but let's do that next time. I'll do back-to-back podcast days for you. It's been a lot happening this season, not all of it fun, but a lot has been going on, so we'll continue to talk about that on next show. Until then, I can only ever ask that you continue to be absolutely awesome out there. You know that I will continue to be absolutely Drew Kreisman in here, and until next time, I will see you at the ballpark.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.